Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
So you are listening to the New Churches Q&A podcast. And since I'm actually doing the introduction, it gives me the opportunity to introduce a new form and a new format. But we're excited to hear from you. We love to hear your questions. We love to share your answers. And we love that New Churches is that online hub where you learn about church multiplication through multi-site and through church planting. You're going to find all kinds of super helpful resources and training that you need, training that's going to help you on your effective journey, as well as a group of community members and experts that are going to assist you in knowing more and doing well and thriving in the midst of church planting. Did you like how I kind of changed that up a little bit, Daniel?
Hey, yeah. Yeah, it was sounded like a narrative going on there.
It did. Instead of, you're listening to the Q&A podcast. I'm just saying, I want to mix it up a little, but that's all right. I did it here. But today we're mixing it up because we're having Daniel M. Talk about his book. Many of you read his book, Five Silver Bullets. And hey, today we're talking about his book, Six Golden Bullets. And so it just gets better and better. It's neither of those are called. The first book is not, it's called No Silver Bullets. And it's just a joke. It's a great book. I hope you've read it. And the new book is You Are What You Do and Six Other Lies About Work, Life, and Love. Kind of interesting because, I mean, you know, we talk about church planting. Your last book was about discipleship. Yeah. This is like nothing you've ever kind of done before. So tell me.
Yeah, it was interesting how it even got written. I was giving a talk on the implications of the gig economy to pastors and church leaders. It was a conference out in Atlanta a couple of years ago. And the gig economy is basically the notion that everyone has a side hustle, and the notion of side hustling is continuing to increase. I mean, it's over 35% right now of the working force in America, and Canada's around there too. Australia, the UK, I mean, so many of these countries, Western industrialized countries. I mean, actually, what's fascinating is Singapore tops the list in terms of how often the gig economy is searched on Google. Oh, interesting. And how pervasive that is and how it's changing our society. So it's a global phenomenon, this idea that everyone has this side hustle and is, you know, Uber's everywhere. And if you aren't driving for Uber, you've probably taken Uber or ordered. So because this has become our new oxygen and it just seems to be everywhere we are and everywhere we go, I wanted to bring about this talk. I wanted to talk to pastors and church leaders and say, hey, how is this affecting you? What that eventually ended up becoming is this book, which is not only to pastors and church leaders, not really just to pastors and church leaders. It's actually more written to those we are pastoring, those in our society instead.
Okay. What is it called? A crossover. You're like a crossover artist here. So, I mean, that takes some risk. So what makes you think that there is an interest in this that would draw people to it? I mean, we've got our listeners are mostly, you know, church planning types. So how would they share this with someone in their church that's just loves the Lord and wants to know how to work well?
Yeah. So specifically to our audience, right? Church pastors, leaders, church planners, this book, the concept of this book is so fascinating. Even if you look at the title, You Are What You Do. I mean, who hasn't believed that lie before, right? I mean, especially church planners too and pastors. It's like, hey, what do you do? I mean, that's often the question that comes up in the first 5 to 10 minutes of any conversation, maybe even the first 5 to 10 seconds. Hey, what do you do? And it's so easy to identify ourselves via this lie and to believe this lie that, yeah, I am what I do. I am what I do. And even some of the other lies in the book, I am what I experience. I am who I know. I am what I know. I am what I own. I am what I raise. And I am my past. At one point in time, all of us have believed these lies. So for the pastor and the church leader listening in, the book basically presents, okay, what is this lie? And I love how Tim Keller puts it. He says, in today's age, we need to deconstruct before we reconstruct. We need to deconstruct the lies of our age and then reconstruct what the gospel says about them. And what I've done in this book is actually deconstructed the seven lies that seem to be rising to the surface because of the gig economy, right? To one extent, a lot of these lies have been around for quite a bit, but what the gig economy has done, because it's this new normal, it's actually brought these lies to the surface and made them even more important for us to wrestle through and address, because not only are we struggling with it, but also especially the people that we are pastoring, those that we are reaching in our cities, the de-churched and the unchurched. I mean, this is just the air that we breathe and the water that we're drinking.
Yeah, and I think for pastors who are listening, church planners, it will kind of help them understand and maybe give counsel and advice to people in their church, but I'm now answering the questions for you, so I'm going to stop. So you kind of given us some of this. Who's the target audience of this? Who's going to read this and say, this is super helpful to me?
Yeah, throughout the book, my prayer was an evangelistic prayer. Okay. All right, my prayer was that the de-churched and the unchurched would read this book and that they would discover Christ in and through it. That was primarily who I was writing to, the person who would pick up that self-help book and be like, man, I got to figure this out. Or, something is not right. Or even for the mom that's saying, hey, the kids are getting a little bit older and I need to figure out what's next. Or the dad that's trying to make ends meet and provide for his family, but is realizing that he's spending way more time working than with his children. For the student who is trying to wrestle through this notion of, okay, do I want a traditional 9-to-5 career? Is that even possible anymore? These are the groups of individuals that I wrote to, because in a sense, every chapter, and it was really fun to write it, every chapter, it was about 60-70% of each chapter is there's no Bible. There's actually, here's the lie that is present that we've all come to believe. And at the end of each chapter, about the last 30-40%, I then break down that lie and say, okay, this is actually what the scriptures say about this and why it's actually a bad thing. It's fragile ground. It's a fragile foundation to build our lives upon it. So I really did write this book to be a little bit more evangelistic so that we would see these lies being shed, light being shed on these lies so that we can live and walk in freedom.
There seems to be a kind of a new emphasis in that today. A lot of people writing books about kind of life and work and balance with an evangelistic intent. And I think in one sense, it sort of is building a bridge and traveling across a bridge of work, as because work is so part of who we are. And it's, God created work and for our good, but using that work as a bridge to communicate gospel truths. So is there something about work that you saw? Because you could have done a hundred different things. You could talk about fishing and how that points people to nature or Christ or whatever. So why work?
Yeah, so one thing that the gig economy has actually risen to the surface, and this has been a massive change in how we approach life, is freedom and flexibility have become the hallmark and the key factors that it's actually obtaining freedom and flexibility is now more desirable than a McMansion with a 3-car garage. And it's interesting how much this has now changed the way that individuals are looking at careers or even re-entering the workforce or wanting to get away from that traditional job, because it's like, hey, yeah, I might make $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 more in this job, but it's actually going to inhibit my flexibility. It's going to make me now work 80 hours instead of 60 hours or 50 hours, and it's going to limit my freedom. So I'm actually not going to do that, and I'm going to look for something that's going to give me more freedom and flexibility. And the gig economy is actually made this possible, whereas maybe 15, 20, 30 years before, it would have been hard to do more than one job, or would have been hard because it would have been frowned upon and people would be like, oh, you're moonlighting and how can you, you know, your attention is divided because you have that job and you're doing this other job. And so the gig economy has actually created the grounds, the fertile grounds for freedom and flexibility to be our new God.
Yeah. So and just for kind of going down the gig economy road just a little bit, we're not talking about gig as in the speed of the internet, but about having different jobs, having different gigs, if you will. And of course, part of the challenge is how do we, I mean, this is not what our parents did. This is not what our grandparents did. You know,
no.
My dad was a union iron lather and, you know, worked for one company most of his life. So how do we think in terms of this when we got a gig economy, but then where's our health insurance come from? Where does the stability of a job come from? Is stability all gone and we're kind of on our own now, or how does that work?
Yeah, and that's an interesting question from an American context compared to some other countries that are addressing
the
workers'
paradise. Everyone has health care. Good point. I forgot about Canada.
So it is an interesting thing to consider how each country will deal with the effects of this. And that's why the gig economy is constantly on the news, even with California passing the bill that they passed around gig work and some of the bills and the laws that are trying to be passed in the UK around healthcare and around what does a gig worker, what rights does a gig worker have? It's an evolving situation around how governments and countries are actually going to be addressing this new way of working.
Yeah, and that's fair. And that's fair because I ask a very American-ish question, but I think because of healthcare. But besides that, you still have the question of desirability. You know, so who's looking for a 75-year-old person to, you know, do and engage in their computer work? Now, again, I'm saying they're not, don't like send me letters. You know, I'm 75 and I'm doing computer work, but there are certain stages of life where the gig economy makes more sense and other stages of life where maybe the stability makes more sense, but it seems that stability is going away.
Yeah, it really does. And even as I've interacted with, I remember this great conversation with his Uber driver. She was probably about mid-50s, a Hispanic lady, and she had teenagers at home, and I was she was driving me to a friend's house in San Francisco, and it was probably 9:30 at night. She picked me up from the airport, and as I was talking to her, I was like, "Hey, do you like doing this?" And she's like, "I love it. I love it. For the first time ever, I have spending money. I have never worked outside of the home because I was taking care of the kids, and my husband was working, but now, after I put all the kids to bed, I Uber from 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. every morning, and I now have spending money." And she started going on about the freedom and the flexibility that she now enjoyed because of work like this. All she needed was a car, and she was able to do that. And conversations with individuals like that, and even individuals in their 70s who were driving Uber, and that's, you know, a common example that I think a lot of people can relate to. But also conversations that I had with this 21-year-old who was saying, "Hey, I am going to seminary, and I'm also a photographer, and I also just got married, and I don't know what to do. Should I drop out or should I do this?" And as I gave him a bit more counsel to say, "Hey, what would it look like if you were to actually hire people to do photography for you because you've already built this brand?" And a couple of years later, I talked to him and he was like, he has this full-fledged business, almost done seminary in pastoral ministry, but he's been able to actually, based on some of the last episodes that we talked about, create new lanes toward ministry because of the gig economy. Yeah,
and I'm tracking with you. And I do think that there's the opportunity for gigs do change is as people become senior citizens. Anyway, and I wonder about some of the complaints. You didn't create the gig economy, so I don't need you to defend the gig economy. but you know, there are some imperfections and some concerns, but certainly some opportunities that are there as well. So back to the book and kind of specific. I mean, I know it's, you know, steeped in the idea of gig economy and more, but it's for everybody because you kind of have this. Well, what is your hope, how it blesses the church and church leaders?
Yeah, so my hope and my prayer all throughout the book was that we would see people coming to know Christ through this book. Every chapter, and that's why I really did write this as that crossover book where the de-churched and the unchurched would be able to read it and it would be accessible to them. Now, obviously, to church leaders and pastors, it's a great book to read so that you're aware of how these lies are present in our age and how they've risen to the surface so that you know how to deconstruct and reconstruct and how to address the people that you are pastoring. There's obviously that end, right? But what I've done is through each of the lies, and the last lie, the last chapter of the book, and the last chapter is you are your past. And I talk about how God can bring about beauty from the ashes and how this is the work that Christ has done. And I actually end the book with a gospel presentation to try to direct readers to Christ to realize that, hey, building your life upon any of these lies is not going to last. It's not going to give you the life that you hope it to and that these lies are promising, that they're really promising you, falsely promising you. So that's my hope. My hope is that this is a resource for pastors and church leaders to know how to better reach those in their city, but really that is also given to the unchurched and the de-churched so that they can discover Christ.
Love it. Love it. And love your passion shining through. So I'm not even going to make a joke about any bullets at the end, but thankful for what you're sharing here. And I think it'll be a blessing to many of our listeners and also probably even more so many of the people in their churches as well. So thanks so much, Daniel.
Awesome. Thanks.